It's Spoiler in Time, the show where we take all the hard work we do on cord killers and understanding how to watch things, watch them, and talk about them. This week, we are going to talk about The Office UK's Christmas Special Part 1, Good Omens, Episodes 1 through 3. I'm Tom Merritt, and with me, spoiler, it's Brian Brushwood.
Yeah, man. I guess a bit of a shorter episode. We're sort of in between some of the golden times of
content. This is jam-packed episode, Brian. This episode's full of three episodes of Good Omens to talk about, plus a Christmas special. We couldn't possibly fit more in, Brian.
Oh, yeah? What about an update on our summer movie draft?
Congratulations, Team John Trent.
I don't know about that because, first of all, congratulations on Team Night Attack, King of the Underperformers. Every single movie underperformed our lowest expectations. Everything from Dumbo, Shazam, Pet Sematary, Detective Pikachu, Rocketman, Secret Life of Pets all came in as low as maybe half of what we expected. Meanwhile, Frog Pants sits atop the Golden Throne with Avengers Endgame rolling in $824 million. Long Shot, another $30 million on top of that. I got to tell you, if I'm reading the tea leaves on this one, Tom, I don't think John Trekker has a chance. I think right now they're at 426 for Captain Marvel. So they have to make up another $430 million.
That means Toy Story 4 and It Chapter 2 combined have to make $430 million.
Now, Night Attack had six movies and every single one underperformed. If you keep on looking, you see that even Aladdin underperformed what I think you were hoping for, Sword and Laser. Every single movie underperforming. Let me put it this way.
Tom is shaking his head at that assertion.
Yeah, no, Aladdin performed better than I expected, honestly.
Which do you think will do better, Aladdin or Toy Story 4?
Toy Story 4.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. It's got Keanu in it, baby.
Keanu is going to push it up even further.
I don't know. We'll see. I think
Toy Story 4 could make $300 billion. Which means the pressure is off It Chapter 2, which if something underperformed, it might be that one.
I think I might give you a side steak bet on this. I think Frog Pants is going to end up winning and defeating John Trekker, because now keep in mind there's the outside possibility that they do a re-release of Avengers Endgame for a push in order to get it above Avatar as the biggest money-making movie of all time. There's also the fact that even if they don't do that, it's going to drift another what, 20 or 30 million over the rest of the summer. I think Frog Pants might have this with just those two movies.
I'm not saying I think it's John Trekker's to lose, because I think Toy Story 4 is expected to make close to $300 million, and It Chapter 2 is expected to make close to $200 million, which would push them over the top. But if they both underperform, they are screwed.
Well, I guess what I'm voting for is just the general sentiment that it seems like this summer is with the exception of Endgame, it seems like just about everything is a little bit less than expected.
I think The Lion King will make $500 million and I win.
Right on. Fingers crossed.
Team Sword and Laser, by the way, Dark Phoenix has sunk us. The only scenario in which Team Sword and Laser wins is if The Lion King makes $400 million, which it
Yeah, so when the news came in on Dark Phoenix's return, you had to be all like, I now know for a fact that we are out of this altogether.
Oh, yeah. No, I kind of knew when I saw the preview last week, when I saw it in the theater. And even the people that are normally fairly positive about movies were just being quiet. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is not going to go well. And then, of course, the rating, the NDA lifted and the reviews came out and they were awful. I'm like, we're done. 32 million though. Wow. 33, I guess, if you round up. That was even worse than I expected, but I wasn't shocked. No.
That's some next level. Ooh.
I needed everything to perform or overperform. John Wick performed, Aladdin overperformed, Dark Phoenix way underperformed. So now I just need Lion King to unexpectedly super overperform.
Yeah, sure.
That's all.
Yeah, you never know.
Gonna be fine.
Beyonce.
All right, let's talk about Good Omens.
Good Omens. It's a good show, Tom.
Yes, you've never read the book, right?
Nope. I mean, yeah, yes, you are correct, comma, no, I've never read the book.
I watch this and feel it is spacious. Like, yeah, of course, I know that, right? And I don't even remember the book that well. I don't remember everything that's going to happen. But Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman did such a good job of characterizing Aziraphale and
Crowley
that I know them. And so it feels leisurely to me. Whereas I know Bryce mentioned this to me. It feels like it must
frantic.
Be, you know, just jam packed full of stuff. Otherwise, yeah. Is that the way you felt?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was frantic to me, and you could tell all the little things that were clearly like big long jokes in the book. Like someone has a freeze frame on Twitter of the opening hours paragraph on the bookstore, because it's like, on weekdays I will be open at 10 a.m. unless I feel like I want to open it earlier. It, like a very big long breathy
sure.
thing. And I think I've mentioned this to you, like the beginning episodes just felt like back and forth and whiplash and time jumps and stuff all like that. And where I think it smooths that out a little bit later on. Did you feel any of that in these first three episodes?
So I think I land squarely in the middle of both of you guys because, and again, Bryce and I, we've not read the source material.
Right.
I could totally understand why you would feel it was luxurious and just sort of, you know, soaking in the atmosphere. I don't tend to mind the skipping and hopping around because it did a good enough job of like literally putting up a sign saying we're at this moment. So it's like, I guess that triggered subroutine storytelling colon collage. And as a result, I don't expect to understand everything at every moment. And it's okay if I don't, especially when I have the warm, soothing voice of God to let me know which parts are important and to remind me of why we are where we are at any given time.
And what was funny is I had to resist the temptation to feel like the voiceovers were unnecessary. Like,
oh my goodness,
no. Telling me all this, right? And then I remember like, oh no, you really need to tell them all that. Like,
yeah.
So it makes sense.
Well, and to me, that's part of what made it charming and, it's a good anchor. So I watched it twice, once alone. I watched the first episode and a half by myself, and then I insisted that my wife watch it again, and we watched the first two episodes together. And it's really different to sit in the room. When I was alone, I had errant thoughts of like, I don't know, could get a little more edgier, I guess. But then when I'm there in the room with my wife, mother of three beautiful daughters, I all of a sudden I realized there's such a value to soft selling and to bring charm and character and humor. And I mean, if you're going to watch a demonic murder of an entire order of nuns, you got to frame that just adorably enough to keep my wife on board while we go into watching the apocalypse, right?
And right, and if this was Preacher, she would have got up and walked out.
Correct.
Because right? They would have just showed nuns being decapitated right and left, burning alive, all of that stuff.
That's a really good way to put it. It's a softer, gentler version of Preacher. Preacher leans into the testosterone. This leans more into the feminine side of things. And I loved it. And oh my goodness, the chemistry between our two lead actors is so delightful. It is so good. And I assume a lot of it has to do because the characters are so clearly fleshed out in the book. Part of it is their incredible talents. Part of it is the adorable conceit. And at the end of the third episode, we get to that moment when he... I don't know how to phrase it, but that moment when he says, we can just run off together. And it's like, and then we like, yeah, we're friends, aren't we? And it's like, whatever metaphors you want to project onto any of this, fine by me, but the spirit remains identical. There is genuine love and affection between these two, an angel who does bad, who bends the rules, and a demon who
does good,
can't help himself. He's got to do the right thing. And I don't know. I feel like thousands of people are going to see that. And whether they ascribe it to, I hope I have a friend like that, a loved one, a partner, of a co-host on a Cord Cutting podcast, whatever it is, like, I felt this moment where it's like that's a real connection. And I just love it. At this point, three episodes in, this series can do no wrong, as far as I'm concerned.
It's true love between those two, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it doesn't matter. They're an angel and a demon, for goodness sake. Like, how are we ever supposed to understand what they would think and or feel? But we do, because it is a universal that is beyond, in some ways, beyond words, which comes through in the book, too. And it was incredible to me that they were able to translate that in any meaningful way. And I think you hit upon it in part that a lot of it has to do with who they cast in these parts and those characters' ability to make this happen. That first episode where you see Crowley back in the 70s or early 80s, I guess, I'm like, man, what is David Tennant just going to do, like a Bill Nye kind of, you know, not Bill Nye the Science Guy, but Bill Nye the British actor. And then when we get to the present, I'm like, oh, no, that he was doing 80s. Crowley and Bill Nye probably should have been cast as 80s Crowley. Like, that's perfect, that because this is an ageless demon. So his presentation is going to change throughout the ages as he just kind of gets into whatever's there, because he's gone native. But he's not going to, his look isn't going to change other than his style. And so he's going to look like David Tennant, but act like Bill Nye. And then he's going to change into something else. But he's going to still look like David Tennant. Anyway, it's a long way of saying, I love that David Tennant was able to pull that off in a way that showed, oh, right, these are taking places in different time periods. And even a demon and an angel are not always the same kind of versions of themselves throughout history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like there are some shows that you got to tell people, wait till the third, fourth, fifth episode. This one, just give it 10 minutes. That when you get through the first 10 minutes and you get through the Douglas Adams-esque opening, Robert Young, my co-host on Night Attack, complained that it was a bit try hard for his tastes. But I, however, loved it. To me, I fell in love with the show and instantly knew the characters. After the opening Garden of Eden scene, and the moment it starts raining, and without a word being spoken, Angel puts up a wing to shield Demon from the rain, and you're like, mm-hmm. That's what this relationship is. And I don't know. I am loving everything from the visual stylings. It's quaint. It's adorable.
What do you think about the actual plot of trying to find the kid and stop the apocalypse?
Don't care insofar. I kind of mean that. Like, uh-huh. like I don't care because I'm enjoying them seeing. I am enjoying them playing with tropes. So we go through in the first episode, the first 40 minutes or whatever, and then once they explain the baby switching and all that stuff, when we do discover Adam, whatever his name is, the Antichrist.
Yeah.
It is the most over-the-top, idyllic, perfect bunch of children stuff. And then you notice little details, like the fact that he's crafted a literal throne for himself to sit upon that all of his friends gather around. Like, yes, everything is on the nose. Yes, everything is pitch perfect and over-the-top to a fault. It might be too saccharine sweet for some people, but whenever I worry about it being too sweet, it's very clearly about the end of the world, and also a kind of scathing, bitter indictment of the Bible and of Christianity and of Talmudic religion. I mean, it's remarkable in that regard that they were able to keep that part so subtle and instead keep our attention, much like the misdirection that they depict in the sleight of hand parts, to keep our attention on the adorable relationships while not being overt or gross about saying, you ever think that maybe the devil's the good guy when he says maybe man should know the difference between good and evil? Like, they keep it just subtle enough that I've really enjoyed all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some things I want to say, but I probably should save them until you've seen the last three episodes, especially regarding Adam. I do love the sort of Douglas Adams-ish aspect, which I think comes from Pratchett, but Gaiman adds to it too, I'm sure, of, you know, the Antichrist gets put in the wrong home because of a clerical error, you know, because of miscommunication. And that sort of thing is Crowley and Aziraphale are able to exist the way they are because of mismanagement, you know, because the executives in their various organizations just, you know, really aren't paying close attention. And they're like, yeah, we'll just file the paperwork and then do whatever we need to do. And so many people can identify with that. And it, like you say, that also is a scathing indictment of organized religion in a way, but they don't put a big red nose on it. They just sort of say, you know, this is a conclusion you can draw. It's right there if you want it. I also love the things they don't do, the things that they just sort of leave out. For instance, Aziraphale and Crowley, a minor spoiler I give in the strictest sense of the world, they don't really interact with humans much.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I guess so.
Yeah.
Even though their job is to interact with humans. And in fact,
that's
actually
what that's their whole plan.
But they don't make a big deal out of it, yeah. Right? They don't, the story doesn't make a big deal out of it. The characters don't make a big deal out of it. It's just they're like, well, you know, I mean, that's they have each other. That's all they need.
Yeah. You know what? It feels a little bit, it tickles the same nerve endings as that Just So story of allies and Axis powers on Christmas Eve getting up and playing football on the battlefield before going back to war. You know, like if that story, whatever that makes you feel in the bottom of your belly is that times 1,000 in this show. Also, surprise, Michael McKean. Loved that. That was amazing.
As the witch hunter sergeant?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. In fact, I found myself pressing pause and reading his entire sign. Like, you know, he's holding a sign that says, this, that, the other thing. Too many nipples. Frolics naked about. Names cats weird things.
No, it's fantastic. I can't wait for you to finish the series, because this is a complete work. Yeah. This is what digital television, I think, is best at. This would have had to been a broadcast television miniseries or something like that, maybe a sci-fi miniseries. But with Prime Video, it just has the freedom to be what it needs to be. And they ended up with 6 episodes. I don't know if they set out to do 6 episodes or if that's just the way the story broke. But I love that this story can be told the way it should without pressure of like, what about a season 2 of Good Omens or anything like that?
So Bonnie said something, my wife Bonnie said something offhandedly that I wanted to immediately dismiss. And it caused me to think, and maybe you guys can help me set my head straight. But like, we sat down to watch it and she noticed the logo Amazon Prime. And then when it was over, she goes, you know, that's what I like about Amazon Prime. Netflix is all about getting overly dark just because they can. But Amazon Prime keeps it light. And then I was about to say, what about The Handmaid's Tale? And I was like, nope, that's Hulu. And then I was like, what about Man in the High Castle? And she said, well, doesn't that have a hopeful message that comes out with the good guys trying to win? And I was like, well, I mean, it starts with I haven't seen it, so whatever.
But Handmaid's Tale, arguably.
Not a hopeful series, no.
No. Okay, but as a brand, keep in mind, and this is subtle mega brand, 1,000-foot view stuff. The Prime logo does have a smile built into it, an intentional smile. And it makes me wonder, I would love to see kind of a statistical analysis of how optimistic or positive the programming is, because we've talked about this before. If somebody else is Coke and they're first, what you do is you be Pepsi. And if Netflix is making their bones with overly negative, because we can, we're going to do it.
Netflix
has
a larger scale where that averages out more than a Hulu.
I mean, Netflix is what you've watched on it. Like, there isn't a brand to Netflix kind of programming. Because they did the Christmas Prince, too. I mean,
I guess I'm just saying, as a – Bonnie mentioned it offhandedly, and I immediately dismissed it. Mm-hmm. And then I made a game of looking at it through that lens. And as, you know, just like a horoscope, I started to see more and more like, maybe, you know, because
it depends that you can make a pure case for Netflix being full of only optimistic stuff if you just leave out the stuff and don't watch the stuff that isn't dark.
Sure. Which is why
Netflix is a total Rorschach test of what you like to watch. But on the flip side of that, why Bonnie has that experience of Netflix is interesting. Maybe it's because of the stuff you like to watch on it, or maybe it's Brian. Just random chance.
What?
Versus Prime Video, which has, I assume, dark programming, but Man in the High Castle is pretty darn dark. I can't think of any others. I don't know if Bosch is that dark. But maybe the smile just makes you think it's nicer.
Well, and so you're right. It could be the presentation that sort of sets the lens.
I don't think it would be wrong to say in general streaming services skews more adult.
Yes.
Which tends to lead to more risque or explicit content.
But also, like, Marvelous Miss Maisel is in general a message about female empowerment in a time when that's not appropriate or wasn't deemed appropriate.
Okay. Queer Eye is an incredibly positive, happy.
Yeah, correct. And that's a Netflix. This will be a fun game for all of our listeners. Cordkillers@gmail.com. Like if you had to pick one to be the Azrael, is that his name? And the other Aziraphale, and one to be the Crowley. Which one would you pick between Netflix and Amazon? And is there anything to the idea that Amazon's original programming in general tends to be slightly more positive and optimistic?
All right. Anything else on Good Omens?
No, it's just I liked it a lot.
Any thoughts about Anathema or the guy?
It's too early by episode 3 to get much out of them outside of to know that they're plot devices. And I think they even, her name is Anathema Device. So it's like I'm well aware, like, okay, this is going to be a thing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she definitely, I guess at the end of the third episode, absent the influence of Aziraphale or Crowley, our Antichrist is being fed essentially coast to coast AM with George Norrie, and so we're starting to see the effects of that. So I don't know. I'm digging it. I enjoy it. It's great. Yeah, it's good.
Cool.
All right, let's move on to The Office. Only two more left, and this is one of them. The Christmas special, part one. These aired on the BBC on Christmas Day for the one we're talking about today. And then part two aired on the day after Christmas, which is called Boxing Day in that part of the world. What did you think of Christmas special, part one, where we reconnect with David Brent of a few years after he has been let go by the paper company?
So, first, my most petty observation, it was kind of fun to see David Brent losing weight and Tim putting on weight. Tim had
I didn't
that,
even notice that.
Oh, no. Well, Tim had the Martin Freeman was finally putting on, you know, man weight, you know, that mm-hmm. happens in your 30s. And David Brent was putting on success losing weight. The kind of thing that happens when you get famous enough that you can afford personal trainers and nutritionists and all that stuff. So it was a little bit like, do you remember watching Firefly after Serenity and Jewel State? She put on like 20 or 30 pounds for the role of Kaylee for the TV series. But mm-hmm. obviously she had moved on in her career. So you saw her looking more skinny and beautiful and model-like in Firefly. And there was part of me that was like, oh, she's not Kaylee anymore. That's just Jewel State reprising the role of Kaylee, kind of. I felt a little bit of that seeing the physical changes over the time between the two series.
All right. I got nothing on that one. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I didn't even notice it. So
this is me beginning with the most petty small observation.
Okay. Yeah. And then what's the next least petty?
Man, oh man, did they make a firm decision that they wanted us to not like David Brent at all? Like,
seriously, right? My problem, if I have a problem, and I'm going to overstate things for the purposes of these discussions, of course. I like The Office UK. But if my problem has been like, okay, it's just way too much David Brent. We get it. He's a jerk. You know, you don't need to really hammer it. And man, they're just like, oh, in case you forgot over the past year since the last season, David Brent is a real reprobate. Here, let me show you over and over and over again.
Well, and he's also lousy at everything he does. And man, look, it's not a contest, but boy, am I thankful for that we were given the gift that is Michael Scott. Somebody who, in general, we found cringeworthy, horrific, idiotic, stupid, bullheaded, overconfident, and wrong, but knew that in his heart of hearts, all he wanted was to be loved. Yeah. David Brent lacks that one redeeming quality. And as a result...
I mean, in this episode particularly, he lacks any redeeming qualities. And that joke's funny a couple of times, but I found it... I put it this way. I'm not sure I smiled during watching this episode.
Yeah, although I did enjoy... And maybe a lot of this was just having lived a taste of some of the life he's trying to live, you know, touring the live events, doing appearances or whatever. Like that moment he gets on stage and he's like, so what are you going to do for us? And he's like, oh, they just told me to say hello. And like the variety, the carny trash in me, the variety street performer was like, oh, you have no material. What are you doing on stage? Oh, dear God. Like that struck me very, very hard.
Gareth being the boss was fun in concept. I didn't feel like they did much with it. I mean, Tim locked him in his office and then was sad that the receptionist didn't get the joke. Okay.
Also not a good joke. Also like at that point, Tim kind of ceases to be our friend.
Funny, Tim. Yeah.
Like that's not, that'd be like us hanging up on you right now, live on Skype.
Ha ha. Right. Oh, okay. Yeah.
It would take way too much work to get it back.
We go into a whole bit where Bryce gets a phone call. He's like, Tom says, let him back on the show. And I'm like, no, don't. I'm like, well, Tom says he has to come back on the show.
Listeners, imagine that sketch here.
Yeah. Okay.
Insert sketch here. I think the most interesting part was Dawn and Lee, because they sort of want to trick you into thinking Dawn had a baby, but then you find out in the course of her description that it's her friend's baby.
I thought that was a good fake out.
It was a pretty good fake out.
They got me.
And their story is at least different. Like, oh, okay, so they went to Florida, they're basically illegals and, you know, just scraping by and you know, they're allowed to stay in that house for free, which makes me wonder how welcome they are as guests at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And they don't really go into that too much. It's weird.
They seem to be really eager, both of them, to go back. Which I feel like if they really were trying to like get by in the U.S. without, you know, under the table living for free, they wouldn't risk that.
What I read that as is that he is too proud to admit that he would like to go back home.
Okay. And doesn't have the money for it.
Right. And can't afford it and doesn't know how he would make it happen. So instead, he insists that they're living the dream. And she just makes do, doing her best to support. Because that's where she is. And and that when, you know, even for a reality TV show, they're given the opportunity to go back, both of them, you know, both pretending like, oh, I don't know, maybe that'd be okay. And then they do. But really, both of them are big old like, woo.
Yeah, yeah. What else? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I guess that is
coming
it.
Back.
Yeah, there was kind of a bit of 20-minute victory lap in the beginning, like, we did The Office! David Brent's famous from The Office! Sort of.
Ricky Gervais is famous because of The... I mean, David Brent is famous for The Office.
Exactly.
Gosh, I really don't have much else to say. It wasn't a miserable episode.
No. Actually...
You know, certainly wasn't even the cringiest episode, but I just didn't... I can get moved.
I think I liked it much more than you did. I think that I liked it enough that I had a hesitation as my finger went to stop it from autoplaying the next episode. this is one of those moments where it's hard for me to not just keep on going because clearly it's a two-parter. I think I got the date wrong.
I said it aired on Christmas. It aired on December 26th, and the next episode aired on December 27th, which is known as Kung Fu Day in the UK.
No, it's not. Is it?
What? No, it's not.
Okay.
That'd be great. First, boxing, kung fu. Then there's then there's Muay Thai day. Oh, then they have Krav Maga day.
That's the eighth day is Krav Maga.
And finally is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu day. I think I liked it much more than you did, Tom.
Yeah, it sounds like you did.
I'm surprised by that.
But I didn't hate it. I didn't sit there like, oh, thank goodness it's over. Like, I realized, like, near the end when it was almost over, I'm like, man, I don't think I laughed. And I always laugh at something.
I do feel like there was one moment that alone in the room, I guffawed at. Mm-hmm. But the fact that I can't remember what it is probably a good indicator. Also, right, also with only one episode left, I'm willing to call it, like, objectively as a piece of art, just as the entirety of the MCU is artistically flatly superior to, oh, I don't know, 1990s Batman. I'm willing to say that the U.S. office as a totality is superior to my 99% experience of the UK office.
There goes Brian with his American exceptionalism again, folks. Don't at me.
Goddamn right. Also, we need to annex farther west. We need to invent new islands and keep on expanding westward.
Now, you know what? I'm not as definitive as you. And it's also an unfair comparison because you've got, what, 7 seasons of the U.S. Version. But, yeah, I enjoyed The Office U.S. more as a whole, as a totality, like you say, than I did The Office U.K. as well. Although we still have one more part. Maybe my opinion will change. Maybe both of our opinions will change next week. Who knows?
Turns out David Brent is Kaiser Soze. Our minds are blown. And we're like, oh, my God, best movie ever.
That's amazing. We will talk about The Office UK Christmas Special Part 2 next week. After that, our library watch will switch to another Ricky Gervais show. Is it The Extras?
Just Extras.
Extras. Okay.
Oh, I'm so excited for you.
Wait, are we doing Brent Life on the Road too?
Do we want to throw that in there?
I don't remember if we decided on that.
Yeah, I think we should. Maybe we could start.
I don't
Extras.
Even know what that is. Oh, that's not in the list of The Office.
It's a standalone movie that is a documentary just about David Brent, Life on the Road, that takes place after The Office ends.
Okay.
But you've never seen it. I thought you had seen all of
No,
Office.
No, I hadn't. My least favorite part of The Office UK is David Brent. So a whole movie about David Brent sounds.
Yeah, you know what? We'll have amazing. Plenty to talk about.
All right. So one more episode of The Office UK, then David Brent Life on the Road 2016 Netflix special that is almost entirely unrelated to The Office that they're making me watch. Then Extras with Ricky Gervais after that.
I love you, Tom.
I love you, too. Good Omens next week. We'll finish that up as well. Possibly a little Black Mirror app action as well. So thank you for supporting us on Patreon. Patreon.com/CordKillers. We'll spoil you again next week.
Also on the menu, Chernobyl. We might do Chernobyl.
Chernobyl, duh.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.